Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Hello everyone and welcome to Inside Track with me, Luca Allam. On today's show, I'm joined by a touch of Hollywood, a touch of Tinseltown. He's a film producer. His name is Elijah Long. Elijah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Luca. Appreciate it.
Do you know how nervous it is to introduce a Hollywood film producer?
I don't know why.
I'm like,
I don't know why.
You work with some of the biggest stars in the world, and here I am just sitting here trying to casually introduce you.
Oh, stop it, man. It's a, you know what? It's a glamorized job, but people still don't know what you do. That's the funny thing about it. People still ask, what does a producer do?
Yeah.
And it's completely different from everything that people assume it is, because you kind of wear so many hats. But, you know.
We're going to get into that, mate. Yeah. I'm aiming for an hour's worth of content, but I could spend hours talking to you.
And man, let's talk, man. I'm here. You got me.
But what I love most is that I'm obviously I've met you a couple of times now, right? Mm-hmm. And You're just a lovely guy.
Thank you.
There are, if nothing else, okay, film producer or not, whatever, you're just a cool guy.
Thanks, man. My mom would be happy.
Yeah, she should be. And just having you in my house here and having a real conversation, I can't tell you how excited I am about this.
Man,
and you know when you know something's going to be good? You have this in the back, you just know it's going to be an amazing episode.
Yeah.
So I've been like this, been waiting for this for quite some time. What's going on with your mug, big guy? What's happening?
You know what? I actually borrowed this mug from your lovely wife.
It looks familiar, yeah.
I picked it out because it has a really cool Mad Men quote, and I was actually a really big fan of Mad Men. It was actually one of the TV shows that made me start really enjoying filmmaking because the colors on there, and it was shot in Miami, and it was the old school Hollywood, but outside of Hollywood, it was that Miami Beach vibe. So it was a collaboration of classic and Hollywood at the same time.
Love
it. Mad Men it is.
Do you know why I like that mug? Because I used to work in advertising. Actually, I used to work in media.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch Mad Men, there was like all these glamorous creative guys, these executives come up with amazing ideas. And then you'll see the media department, it'll be one dude in a corner in the office trying to punching in some numbers, trying to budget this entire thing. That was basically what I was doing for the longest time. But it really did glamorize our industry. So
absolutely.
It's a good choice, my
friend.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So you're a film producer.
Yes.
Right? But you weren't always a film producer as well.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously did. You started off, funnily enough, in the US Navy.
I did.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
And
you started off quite young as well. What was that like, starting off in the US Navy?
After high school, I knew that I was not a school person. So going to college was like, Being in Dubai is completely different from America in the sense that in America, parents are like, you're 18, it's time to go, you know?
So get out of the house.
I don't care what you do. Yeah. You're doing something. You're either going to go to college, you're going to get a job, but you're getting up out of here. And so, you know, you kind of have this mentality when you turn 18, what am I going to do? That's actually a lot of anxiety for a lot of American kids. It's like, okay,
it's not just American kids. It's all of us, mate.
The reason why I say that is because this side of the world, a lot of the culture is you don't leave the house until you're married. And that's sometimes for the boys and the girls. So with that being said, it pushed me to expand my horizons in the sense of I don't want to go to college because what I essentially want to do doesn't require a college education. I believe that if you're a lawyer or a doctor or something where you really need that education, you go to college. But in the entrepreneurial spirit that I have, I knew I didn't need college. I needed experience. And I take a quote from Quentin Tarantino. He says, I didn't go to directing school. I went to directing, you know? And so the experience that you'll get on set versus the experience in college is totally different.
Yeah.
I know certain producers that won't hire film school graduates. The reason why is he has to unlearn you everything that you were taught.
He's too polished already.
And it doesn't leave room for flexibility.
Creativity.
So with that being said, I wanted to do something that was going to give me life experience. And that's why I went to the Navy. So it was more than life experience. It was life experience. It was staring death in the face. It was traveling. It was learning new cultures at the early age of 17, 18. That was the first time I came to Dubai. I was, it wasn't Dubai at that time, it was Jebel Ali. And we pulled into the port of Jebel Ali, and the only building that was here back then was the Burj Al Arab. And so it was, back then it was a popular brand called Nautica at the time. And we used to call it the Sailboat Hotel.
Yeah.
Because it was just like the Nautica logo. So it was really, really cool. But it was eye-opening, the Navy was, just to be on an open sea for 30, 35 days at a time.
Yeah.
And you're looking around and it's nothing but water. That was the first time I saw a whale breach in real life. Watching wildlife that I've never seen before, jumping off the banks into the ocean. It was experience that you can't buy in a college.
You mentioned life-threatening as well, Elijah. What happened that was life-threatening?
A couple of things. You know, you're in the middle of the ocean. You know, anything can happen. You, when we are getting our food delivered, there is a funnel process that comes from one ship to the next. And also our fuel as well. So there's a fuel line that comes from one ship, I believe it's called the Frigate, and I was on an aircraft carrier. So that line goes to our, and the wrong spark that can explode.
Yeah.
I had a few shipmates that did go overboard, they passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And, you know, to walk around the ship, you know, it's a city on the water.
Yeah.
You know, there's 5,000 people on this ship. You know, you have the people that work in the morning, people that work in the day. You have the aircraft crew. You got the people that work at the below decks, the cooks. It's a moving city. And there's a lot of things that go on the water that I still can't talk about to this day. But it's a moving city, and it's a whole lot of life.
Did you imagine when you were seeing Jebel Ali for the first time, or the Burj Al Arab, that 25 years plus later, whatever the case is,
never in
you'd
life.
End up being living now in Dubai?
Never in life, because all I saw was sand.
Yeah. And water.
Sand and water, yeah. You know? And I do remember, I used to wear these overalls, and maybe later I'll give you the picture to paint for this particular image. And I just remember, maybe this is TMI, taking off everything under these overalls because it was so hot. I would literally put on a t-shirt and underwear and it'd be wet, just drenched with sweat in a matter of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this heat?
Yeah.
Is this a heat that I'd never felt before? And so imagine that, but on the water, you know, so no shade, no nothing. And so it was, I didn't imagine that I'd be back on this side of the world, but now I'm extremely happy that
I talked about a picture. Over your right shoulder, there's a customized image of a little bit of your life. And you can see, obviously, the Navy plays some sort of role in there as well.
Look at there. You got the New York, everything.
Yeah. So we want to talk about New York. So I read somewhere that you came back from the Navy and you went to New York. Mm-hmm. And
I went to Chicago first.
You went to Chicago first.
Yeah, I went back home.
The Windy City. Which you've already explained to me why it's called Windy, which is quite nice.
You know what's funny? I learned why it was called the Windy City by writing my first script.
Wow.
Yeah, so I wrote a movie called The Flames of October. One piece of really good information that a lot of people don't know about Chicago. Chicago burned to the ground twice. And they called it the Windy City because of the nefarious dealings of the politicians. And so it was like, okay, they'll flow whichever way the wind blows, you know?
I love that
story. So that's the Windy. But later on, the weather kind of took on that name. But yeah, that's why they call it the Windy City. But I came home directly after the Navy, and it was daunting because I had just finished seeing the world.
Then I went back. How old were you?
I was like, when I got out, I was 21 when I got out.
Okay, you did 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I did 3 years. And so I got out early because you went to college.
Okay.
And I'm really glad that I got out when I did because 9/11 happened the following year.
Yeah.
And so with that being said, I got out and it was daunting because I had just seen so much of the world. And then I just came right back to the place where it all started, and it felt so small.
Yeah.
And at that point, I said, I have to take a chance. And so I started dating this young lady. We started hitting it off. And she got a call saying that she was going to get the job at, I think it was United Airlines. And I said, well, I was planning on moving to New York. She said, well, I just got stationed in Jersey. That's like 15 minutes away. So I said, okay, well, you want to go together? Let's go. 6 days before we were supposed to leave, January 9th, I'll never forget, her brother got shot up. So he got shot up, I think, like maybe 9 times,
oh my God.
9 or 10 times or something like that, and was in the hospital. And it didn't look like he was going to make it. And her entire family only consisted of her brother and her mom. And she's like, I just can't leave my mom with my brother in ICU. And she just couldn't go. And so I had sold things, packed my bags, and bought my ticket. I was like, what do I do? Do I wait for the perfect time? And I just, like, can we curse?
Of course.
I just said, f*** it. I said, f*** it. I just got on a flight.
Yeah.
And it really didn't hit me until I actually got to New York.
Yeah.
And when I got to New York, you know that feeling that you get when someone is supposed to pick you up from the airport? This was before Uber, okay? So you get the sense of, okay, somebody's coming to get me, and then you go get your bags from the luggage and everything, and you get there, and you're like, wait, nobody's coming to get me.
Yeah.
And it's my first time in New York City.
Was that one-way? You bought a one-way ticket?
One-way ticket.
That's the scariest thing. Yeah, yeah. No one buys a one-way ticket.
Well, I bought a one-way ticket because I thought I had a place to stay because United Airlines puts her up, you know? So I was like, okay, I'll pay you whatever. No place to stay at that point. Mind you, cell phones weren't a real thing. You know, I'm not that old. I'm 44.
You're 44.
I'm 44. Okay. Yeah, but cell phones weren't like, oh, everybody has a cell phone. It wasn't like that. There is no MapQuest. And like, none of that existed. So with that being said, it was face-to-face interactions. And I started sleeping at Port Authority. And I would go to Jersey and I would lock up a lot of my things. They used to have these lockers. It's where you put the quarter
Explain
in.
Explain what Port Authority is for those who don't
Port
know.
Authority is a kind of an intersecting train station.
Yeah. It's a public place.
It's a public place.
So you're sleeping, you know? Basically. Yeah. Outside.
You can come in and
as
out.
You're sleeping on the streets.
Exactly. It's essentially like a housing for where you go into the train system, the subway system. So you go into this place, you go down, and then you take the A train, B train, the 2 train, whatever train you're going to take. And so I found like a nice little cubbyhole where you're supposed to wait. And William is his name. I'll never forget him. He's a security guard. After a while, he kind of figured that I ain't have no place to go. And so he just stopped bothering me after a while. And so I thanked him years later. I came and I brought him some cool stuff.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, went
from the U.S. Navy.
Yeah.
And they ended up, via Chicago, New York. Yeah. You ended up sleeping.
But I'll tell you this. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be who I am today.
Well, I was going to tell you that. Right. So look, I'll let you into a little secret. After the first time I met you a few days back, me and my wife had a conversation and we said one of the nicest things about you. We even told you to your face how much we liked you.
Thank you.
That humility that you have, I think in large part, I don't know what you've been through in your life, but just that hearing that story would make anybody incredibly humble. And I think you come across like that and someone that's grateful and for what they have.
Very grateful.
And when success does come, you're just more appreciative, right? More thankful.
Yeah.
I can see that.
It's a couple of people in the industry that I kind of took note from, but I had so much, once again, life experience to where life humbled me. One of the times that was like the roughest in New York when I was homeless, well, I don't want to say it was rough. It was funny and eye-opening at the same time. Everyone talks about the New York rats. The New York rats are like...
This is not a basketball team is actual rats.
R-A-T-S. With the long tail in the ears. I'm talking real Mickey Mouse right here. And so... I mean, they just run everywhere. And so I literally had a bag under my left arm and I had just gotten a slice of pizza. So it was in the triangle box, you know, and from Sombreros. Sombreros is the name of the place. And so like I literally dozed off for a second and I had my pizza right here. I woke up to a rat eating my end of my pizza, right?
The crust, so, you don't eat the crust.
No. Yeah. It's like the triangle. He was eating the front part of the triangle.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I woke up, like, I felt his movement, and I woke up, and I'm like, get away, you know? And so I looked up, and I opened the box, because he ate through the box. And so I looked at the piece that he ate, but I was starving at that time. I tore off the piece
that he,
ate, yeah. and then I ate the rest.
Yeah. When you eat a pizza now, does your mind go back to that moment?
It doesn't. But however, I said to myself in that moment, I was like, well, if this is the bottom.
Yeah, let me eat it.
I know what the bottom feels like.
Yeah.
So what that did for me as a person is everything that I go through in my life, I have a reference. Is it worse than that point? Nope. Yeah. All right, I can do it, you know? Yeah. And so it was like, okay, I just remember being cold. It was freezing cold. It's wintertime, and I remember, you know, sometimes you're hungry. I remember the rat scenario. I remember when I did get a phone, it got stolen because I was charging it and a plug dozed off, and then, you know, somebody took it. I remember these little problems that were like massive problems to me at that time. And so it gives me a reference point to go back to. So it was something that I needed because God knew where I was going in my life and what I was going to have to go through. So he positioned me to go through that so I can have the tenacity to do what I do now, because you can't be in my position and not have gone through some things. You got to be tough in and out.
Look, I don't think you're going to need it, but I do on my show anyway. I always ask my guests if there's a safe word. If I ask a question they don't want to answer and they don't want to reveal too much information, I give them a get out of jail card. So
pineapple.
That's just okay. So pineapple is your safe word. Amazing.
Nah, I mean, I was joking, but it can be the safe word.
Do you have pineapple on a pizza? Let's try and think of. Do you have pineapple?
No,
on pizza?
That's actually disgusting.
It is. Thank you. I appreciate
warm
that.
Pineapple is disgusting.
I'm with you, my friend. Yeah. I'm with you. My mom's Italian. She heard that anyone liked pineapple on pizza.
Nah,
it just doesn't make sense.
Nah, I'm good.
So what are you doing now? So let's fast forward. So you've had a hell, by the way, that's a movie in its own right, right? Your sort of those few years. What are you working on now?
Working on and finishing are two different things. I'm always working on something. I believe in the octopus theory.
What's that?
Have 8 things going on at one time. In either something that you're starting, something that's already been created, something that you're pushing forward, and something that's coming out. You know, you have to give the people something, and give yourself something more or less.
I have a few things going on. I have a movie called Beyond the Likes that is coming out
very soon here in the UAE.
Very, very soon, very soon. That is starring Matt Rife. That is starring Andrew Batchelor, King Batch. That is starring Don Benjamin, Adam Waheed. A lot of the social media influencers that you will know, Tosin Moranfala. Who else is in this film? Stephanie Ner. Stephanie Ner is an up-and-coming actress that you guys are going to see a lot of. She just recently starred in the series Lioness with Morgan Freeman, Nicole Kidman, and Zoe Saldana. So she played the fourth lead in that. She was incredible. So yeah, I have a pretty amazing cast.
So what's it about?
It's a collaboration of a lot of things. But the main storyline is that you have 5 friends, similar to kind of an entourage vibe. Everybody's going after their own dream. You have the dancer, you have the model, you have the actor, and you have the chef. And they're all living together in this house that they've named Vision Central. They're trying to keep their Vision Central, and they're collectively a group of friends that, you know, don't really have family, so they became each other's family. In that process, the model, played by Don Benjamin, he meets this rich heiress from Abu Dhabi in the city of Chicago.
Of course, Chicago is filled with Abu Dhabi heiresses.
Well, what happens is she is going through her own battles of her own internally. Speaking culturally, you have a rich heiress who has a very prominent father. And, you know, he wants to kind of guide her life in the direction that he wants it to go. However, she has a different plan for her own life. And in the process of trying to figure it out, she decides to go to America, and she decides to pick Chicago as the city. So she meets this character, Cam Weston, and they fall for each other. And in the process of trying to keep up with who this heiress is, this guy, Cam Weston, he starts lying about who he is.
And it snowballs, right?
And it snowballs. And I wanted to make a piece for the kids today. we had movies back in the day that taught us things. I remember watching a movie called The Bronx Tale. This particular movie, it was incredible for so many things. So there was an instance where the lead character said, "How do you know if a girl's the one?" And he said, "This is what I'll do." He said, "Take my car and lock both sides of the door, all right? When you pick her up, you open her door and you let her in the door, all right?" He says, "But when you go to your side, you walk around the back of the car so you can see her, but she can't see you." He said, "Look through the back window. If she doesn't reach over and open that door for her, you drop her off back home. You don't even take her out on the date. But if she reaches over and she's considerate enough to make sure your door is open too, that's a partner for you. That's the one you take home to mom."
I love that.
And movies used to give you different little nuances like
nuggets,
that.
Nuggets.
Nuggets. Just for life. Yeah,
life,
you know?
Life lessons.
They don't make movies like that no more. They make Spider-Man 18 and all the, you know, it's like, so, you know.
Yeah,
so,
I'm with you.
So with that being said, I want it to be playing on where the world is now, meaning a lot of the girls online, it's like, you know, "Oh, you got to pay my bills to date me. You got to do this." And then the guys are like, "Oh, okay, let me act like I'm super wealthy so I can get the attention." When this story is just about two people who wanted to be with each other, but you're adding the fabricated parts to make yourself seem more appealing when all you have to do is be you.
Yeah.
And you are enough.
So that's the key message.
That's the key message. And that's why the log line that I wrote is called "Dream Big, Love Bigger." And that's pretty much what happens in this story. I'm really proud of it because it crosses the cultures as well.
Yeah.
It's an American man falling in love with a very Arab female. And, you know, in certain instances, when a person isn't Muslim and the other one's Christian, it's kind of haram.
Yeah.
And so with that being said, he takes the steps to, I'm not going to tell you the movie, but, you know, it's effort that needs to be put in.
Yeah.
And
is that about helping break stereotypes, perceptions?
1,000%.
On both sides.
On both sides. You know, it's at the end of the day, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, we're all people and we all feel. And so I really believe that this film is going to make a lot of people feel.
Yeah.
And that's my job as a filmmaker.
I love that, man. I can't wait to watch that. Honestly, it's coming very, very soon.
Very, very soon.
And it's the world premiere is going to be here in the UAE.
The world premiere is going to be here in the UAE.
Do you know how much the Arabs would love that? The fact that there's a movie coming out.
Yeah.
That stars Arab talent.
Being shot in Abu Dhabi, right?
Yeah.
Shout out to Samir Al-Misri and Jumana Murad.
Amazing.
Incredible actors. Yeah. Incredible. I can't wait to work with both of them again.
Yeah. But I was saying, like, the Arab sentiment is, if you take Arabic stars shooting it in the Middle East, and on top of that, saying it's going to be the world premiere, that's a slam dunk.
There
I'm not a basketball player, but that's a
there
slam dunk for this region. So.
There you go.
And now you live in Dubai, right?
I do live in Dubai.
You're full-time and you're a big advocate of the region.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people know you from Hollywood. You know, you've been nominated 2 times for Emmys. Is that right?
I was.
That's a big deal, mate.
Yeah, it was a cool time.
Yeah.
I was nominated as an actor, though, not as a producer.
No, as a producer. Okay.
Yeah. Because I started off my entire, well, if I go back, I started off in music. So that was.
So something that you haven't done.
Yeah. So
have you a pro athlete? Have you done any of that?
You know what? When I got.
Kenneth, you did it as well, didn't you?
I was an athlete. I didn't go professional or anything, but I was an athlete. But I want to die empty, Luke, because I want to die empty.
Yeah.
You know, I want to die saying when I'm on that bed, I want to say I've tried everything.
Yeah.
I tried everything that my heart desired because it sucks laying on that bed. Dying with full of ideas.
Regrets.
You know, it's not about money. It's not about anything, but it's about leaving your mark on the world and in the world saying, "Oh yeah, Elijah Long was here because this, and this, or he taught me this," or something I could pass on to my kids, or just something, you know?
Yeah.
So I just want to die empty. So yeah, I started off in music. I was a signed recording artist. I'll leave the label name out of it. But that transitioned into me using those contacts to start producing music videos. So from the music videos came the producing and writing and different things later. But before that, while I was doing music, I was acting.
Yeah.
Tim Reed, which is an old actor, he gave me my first movie role. So I shot that. And after that was just a bunch of TV roles and a few movies after that. And I did a show called Clean House with Emmy Award winning, Golden Globe winning actress Niecy Nash. And we did a show called Clean House. It was number two behind the Kardashians. We were on the same network.
God, you're going up against Kardashians. That's tough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was when Kardashians were first coming out. So that lets you know how big the show was that we were on. Nice. So, yeah, we got nominated for two daytime Emmys, and it was a pretty cool time.
Yeah.
But it was also the time that I realized that I didn't want to be an actor anymore.
Yeah.
Well, let me rephrase that. I didn't like the fame. And that is kind of what changed a lot of trajectory for me. When I realized, so in Los Angeles, everybody lives there, right? A star could have just been at the grocery store. Fans saw him at the grocery store. Denzel, whoever, Brad Pitt, wherever. Why would they run up to me? No one cares. But when you step out of LA and you go to St. Louis or Alabama or different places around America where they don't see stars, then it's like, I know you. And people can be intrusive. They don't care if you're
eating. Being very diplomatic.
Yeah, they don't care if you're eating. They also think that you're the person on the show. Why didn't you do this? And why didn't you? I'm like, I didn't write any of that.
So the invasiveness into your personal life was one of the reasons why you first get behind the camera.
Yeah, and it's like, and it leaves no room for error.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I didn't want that on my shoulders. So I'll give you an example. They had a whole Me Too movement that happened in Hollywood to where a lot of...
It went everywhere.
Yeah, a lot of mogul execs were, you know, getting taken down. Some of the claims were real, some of them weren't. However, what people don't realize is this. When an actor gets accused of something, before it used to be innocent until proven guilty. Now the accusations, they take everything away even before you get a chance to prove have your day in court.
I mean,
court.
Johnny Depp was one of the most, exactly.
So
it was a clear case of that, right?
There you go.
He was guilty.
Exactly. Immediately, you know, just because the woman said it. And we found out he wasn't. However, going back to that.
Have you met Johnny, by the way?
I have met Johnny several times. What's he like? He's a cool guy. Very laid back, very quiet, actually. Very artsy. He's a very, very much an artist. But I digress. My point in saying that is you have an artist that does a show. He's the lead. When that show goes away, people are just thinking about the artists. You're not thinking about the 300 people that work on that show. Right now, right, I see your whole team around me.
They're not 300.
It's not 300.
Yeah, yeah.
But however, they're employed by you.
Yeah.
Luca goes away. They go away. Their jobs go away. Everybody else. And then there's a snowball effect.
Yeah.
When I sat back and realized the responsibility, not to mention the target you become, and there was an instance. Can we get a little personal?
Of course, mate.
I went to my first movie premiere, and it's my first taste of fame. And, you know, you got everybody calling your name. You're walking down the red carpet. Mind you, you can go to as much media training as you would like to go to. Nothing prepares you for this. Nothing. Nothing prepares you for the DM messages. Nothing prepares you from people finding where you live. Nothing prepares you for that. So you kind of have to, you know, take things as you go. So meet a young lady. Me and this young lady, you know, we go out, have dinner, have some drinks, go back to my place where we're hanging out. She asks to use the bathroom. I said, oh, yeah, the bathroom's in there. All right. So she goes to the bathroom. It clicks in my head that I used the last of the tissue. And so the door was kind of cracked open. So I went there and I was going to say, you know, hey, the tissue's under the sink, you know. And so when I cracked open the door, she like dropped what was in her hand. And I was just like, okay, that was weird. And my medicine cabinet was open. So I had one of those ones to where it's the mirror, oh, wow, that you open it, wow, the medicine cabinet. And so I was like, man, what was she doing? You know what I mean? I'm just yeah, curious at this point. And then so she comes back and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You know, here's a glass of wine or whatever. I go back in the bathroom. And I'm like, what was she doing? And so I just started fiddling with stuff.
And then something just dawned on me. You've been a kid before and you've tried to find a hole in your bike tire, right? And you dip it in water and the bubbles come up so you know where the hole is.
I haven't tried that.
Yeah. So that's
good tip.
But that's like if you ever have like a plug, like they'll find it. They put it in water and wherever the bubbles come up, that's where the hole is in your tire, and they know how to patch it, right? So something told me to take my condoms and put it in water. The bubbles started coming up. She was poking holes in my condoms. And it did something to me. And it let me know that this is real. And it was like, no more pinch me. It's real.
That's, you know? I don't even know how to begin to describe that.
And that was a moment for me. And I said to myself, it lightening things up, it's like, I like going to the grocery store. I like not being bothered. Yeah. I get moody. I'm a Scorpio. So it's just like, I don't want to be bothered today, you know? But one thing Niecy Nash taught me, she said that when you see a fan for the first time, that may be the only time you ever see them. You may be having a bad day, but for them, it's the day that I met my celebrity fan favorite or whatever it may be. And so you have to turn on for these people.
All the time.
And I just didn't want to be a light switch.
Yeah,
fair. But I do still love the craft. So I wanted to be in a position to where I'm a producer, I'm in power, I control the production. And if I feel like throwing myself in a movie, I can.
Yeah, why not?
You know?
No, we'll comp.
Yeah.
Man, you're going to have to cast me in one of those movies.
Hey, let's jump in and let's see what you can do, man.
I can audition at any time. I can do languages.
I love it.
You're famous in Hollywood for Rambo 5. It's one of your biggest
Rambo
movies.
Last Blood. Yeah.
Last Blood.
Yeah, right? That was my best. That's my biggest film to date.
And the ending is down to you. So you had to basically rewrite the ending, right? Where... You remember the little girl coming up? It's your movie.
I didn't rewrite. I strongly suggested.
You strongly suggested, but you got it done. And the difference was, in your version, the girl kind of had to die, right? At the end. I don't want to ruin the movie, right?
But I think everybody's seen it by this time.
It had to happen for John Rambo to be so incensed, to have that sort of primal sort of anger inside, for him to then do that final scene, which is literally cutting out a guy's heart.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was genius. And I don't remember anything other than, I told this off camera, I don't remember anything from that movie except that ending. It's brilliant.
Well, the thing is, you know, you have your action movies, you have your Takens and Bourne Identities and different things like that. But if you go back to where action movies started, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone. Those were the two that were battling all the time for who's the top action hero.
Who would you choose?
Stallone, I'm biased. But the thing is, you know, Schwarzenegger was, you know, guns and muscle and stuff like that. So was Stallone, but he was a hand-to-hand combat war vet type individual. He's seen some things. So with that being said, the title Rambo, people have started using that even as an adjective. Yeah. It's like, bro, I'll go Rambo on you. You know, that makes someone know, oh, you're going to really go crazy.
It's like the vacuum cleaner.
Exactly.
You use Hoover, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So with that being said, when it comes to storytelling, you have to put the character in situations to be themselves. And with that being said, you can go save a person. He's already relinquished that evil side of him. He was living in peace. He was calm. He was doing his little things, not bothering anybody. So kind of like Mike Tyson, there's a certain amount of zen that comes after you've done so much physical damage to people. So he was in his zen. The only thing that can take him out of his zen is if you take his peace. Mm. And when you killed that little girl, you completely took his peace and everything that he had. And that is a reason to open up the jar again and turn into being Rambo.
So. Look, I've got a bunch of questions in here that are related to movie making, a little bit about yourself as well.
Yeah.
Before we get into them, I had a guy who's from this region. His name is Nadim. Nad's Reviews. He he reviews movies and series all the time. I had a question for him that's been a long-term debate in the movie industry.
Okay.
And the question is as follows, and I want you to go with your immediate gut feel, okay. right? None of this, oh, I don't know, man. No, it's either yes or no,
okay?
Is the original Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I had to remember the movie Die Hard. It was a long time ago. You can kind of say it is.
Yes, I love it.
Right, let's start. You kind of say it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a very unorthodox film, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, it was on North, but it was set during Christmas Eve.
It was.
It was in L.A., I think.
It was in L.A., and I know the exact place that it was shot. I used to deliver packages to the building that he slid down.
Yeah.
The cool thing is, if you want to find out some more about that movie, there's a series on Netflix called The Movies That Made Us.
Okay.
And it's the behind the scenes of all of your favorite movies. I'm talking about Elf. I'm talking about Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Back to the Future had a completely different actor.
Wow.
They shot half the movie and then scrapped it and said he's not the right guy. Went and got Michael J. Fox and reshot everything all over again.
Yeah.
So it's like how...
They made the right call with
that. Absolutely they did. The right but call. It's like how Hollywood movies are made behind the... You have
Spin-off question. Who is the one character that was miscast? That had he been cast or she'd been cast correctly, the movie would have done even better.
Who, in what
is there any movie that you've watched go, that was the wrong casting and it could have been massive?
Mm.
A movie that I would know, not one of those, you know, sort of boutique movies.
This is one to where it would have been different, but I can't say that it was miscast. However, Will Smith was the original Neo for Matrix.
You know what is so funny? I was thinking Matrix.
Yeah.
But then again, I love Keanu Reeves.
And
I love him
that.
As a person as much as I love him as an actor.
Exactly.
But there was something about the movie, I think, how would have this been with someone else?
Yeah. So Will Smith was the original.
It's so
Neo.
Crazy. I was thinking about okay.
Yeah.
Right, let's start with the questions.
It's golf
now,
balls
look,
in here,
now huh? I have to tell you this. You write movies, you're a screenwriter, you're a producer. Mm-hmm. Do you know how challenging it is to come up with questions for someone like you?
Oh, stop.
Do you have any idea? So I've given this my best shot, and like I said, I hope you like the questions.
All right, I love it. I love it. Let's do this. Who's the key stakeholder, audiences or studios?
When you're making a movie, who's the key stakeholder? Is it the guys who are paying the bills, right, in the production, the movie, or is it the guys and girls who are actually going to the cinema or who are, you know, watching?
Well, the key stakeholders are always the fans, but that's after the film is made. However, the person that's key in getting any film off the ground is the financier. So the financier could be an individual, it can be a studio or anything like that.
So when you're making a movie, in your mind, you're doing this to help please if the studios come to you and say, we think the movie should go in this kind of direction.
Most of the movies don't come together like that unless you have a direct studio deal. I was able to get on Rambo because I produced All-Star Weekend for Jamie Foxx. So All-Star Weekend for Jamie Foxx was starring Robert Downey Jr., Gerard Butler, Eva Longoria, DJ Khaled, French Montana, of course, Jamie Foxx, Jeremy Piven.
Wow. That's all?
Floyd Mayweather. Oh, like, we literally put everybody in this movie. Jamie literally picked up the phone and called all his friends and was like, look, I'm directing something and I want you to be a part. And they came through.
Yeah.
It was
amazing.
And that was my first movie.
Yeah.
And so I'm lucky enough to have been mentored by Jamie. I was there to kind of help, you know, guide the script and be his hands. And with that being said, I was flabbergasted by... Every week, somebody else major was signing on to the movie. And I'm like, for my first movie? Like, this is crazy. Yeah. And so having done a film of that magnitude afforded me the opportunity to be even considered for Rambo.
Yeah.
And the reason why I became one of the executive producers, because originally I was just a co-producer on Rambo, I brought financing to the film as
What's the difference between an exec and a co-producer?
So executive producer can be a lot of things. Executive producers can be one of the studio heads. Executive producers have something to do with the finance. executive producer, can be you've handled a major distribution or marketing or something major to take the film to the next level. Those are usually executives. Producers, produced by, those are the people who produce the movie, create the movie, those type of
the
aspects.
The doers, the actual doers.
The doers, the actual physical creatives who actually put the
was
film
the
together.
Was the guy, the executive producer, more the strategists, I'm guessing?
A facilitator,
okay.
I would say. Because the like in TV shows, the producers are the key. In movies, director is the key. Like, it's led by the director. And the producer's job is to facilitate the director's vision for the film.
Who's the best director in the world, in your opinion?
Wow, that's a hard, hard question. Because I love so many movies. Scorsese.
Who's the best, other than yourself, who's the best executive producer or producer in the world?
It varies. Because it's like, you know, Brian Grazer. Like, I mean, it's so many. George Lucas. Like, it's so many. Yeah. Because it's like, they've done so much incredible work. And then I'm talking, in my mind, I'm thinking numbers. I'm thinking longevity.
Yeah.
I'm thinking
consistency,
you know, different things like that. So there's a lot of different variables as far as producer. Will Packer's an amazing producer. Yeah. I think he's had like, what, 15 number one.
But
in
it's
the
fair
box
to
office.
Say the producer never gets the glory as the director.
Now they are. I've never had to do in front of the camera stuff until now. It's funny how it comes full circle. I started off acting and then I pulled back to be behind the camera. Yeah. Now how the world works is, we need you to start posting. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just like, what do you mean posting for what? I'm too busy doing the movie. Yeah. Like, okay, but you got to post about it. It's like, oh my God. You know, so it puts you right back in front of the camera. Now I'm sitting here doing interviews and shit.
Man, the camera's on here, just me.
You know,
just
so, but yeah, so it's a, it's a lot with that particular question, but it takes a lot of collaborative effort to put a movie together. No, you can't do it by yourself, you know?
When you're making a movie, do you keep thinking in the back of your mind, what will the audience think about this? Is or if you do that, you're going to constantly second guess yourself?
No, yeah, you'll constantly second guess.
Okay, so you've got to be quite ruthless with what you're going to go
after. No. You have to be honest.
Okay.
You be honest to yourself, you be honest to the vision, and you hope people like it.
Okay.
Because if you're honest, it'll resonate.
Yeah.
The one thing that never lies is that camera.
So you're telling me the studios don't come along and saying, look, you know, how is it going? What's going on? I'm spending a lot of money. We want this done in a certain way. They don't put that level of pressure?
No.
They give you that freedom to operate?
I wouldn't say freedom, but you have a line producer. I know if I'm making my days or not. What that means is so each page of a script has a location. It has a dollar amount attached to it. So one page of a script is 1 minute on screen. If I have to shoot 30 pages today, all right, that's 30 minutes of the movie, all right? If I only shot 18, I know I didn't make my day. Now I have to take the rest of those scenes, I have to dump it into the following day, and that'll keep carrying over if I don't make my day. So the network or the studio or my independent financiers, they know if I'm not making my day, if I'm calling them like, I need some more money. You know what I mean? So that's never a good thing. And I've seen producers and directors fired on the actual set of their own movies because they weren't making their day.
It was
costing too much. So,
and who sets those deadlines? The studios or the...
Yeah, studios will come on set and, you know, they're hearing bad things, something's going on, people's, you know, safety's in jeopardy or just, you know, because what starts to happen is when you're not making your days, you start rushing.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're rushing your crew. And my whole thing is remain calm. If I have an issue, I pull the director to the back because they're not supposed to know that there's turmoil behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of turmoil behind
Beyond the Likes.
No one ever knew. The actors never knew.
Yeah.
Why? Because you change the morale on set if everybody knows there's something going
on. Yeah, it's
going to
affect the whole shoot.
It's going to affect the whole shoot. And I need them to give me a good performance.
God,
so
it's a
there's
completely
no way.
Different world.
Yeah,
like
it's a different
doing.
World. Right. It's a different world, man.
It takes the glamour and the sort of the gloss a little bit off.
People only
if
see
people
the red
saw the
carpet.
Truth, it's always going on.
It's like when you think about what a producer does, a producer is from script to screen. A writer comes to me with a script and says, I think this is a good idea. Elevator pitches me. Right? I take the script, I read it, I see how commercial this is, or I see how this story resonates to me.
Yeah.
If I connect with the story and it's a story I want to tell, then I have to go find financing.
I just so happen to have a script upstairs.
Yeah, and so that's essentially how it happens. Yeah. And so now I have to take this, I have to go get it financed, I have to go find the actors, I have to put the actors to it, I have to use my relationships. Look, okay, if I can't pay you your $20 million for this film, all right, how about I give you points on the back end and make you a producer? And then, so there's a lot of bartering.
Maneuvering.
Maneuvering and relationships are key.
I hear it's a very tough, very shady industry.
I think the music industry is a lot more shady than the film business. However, it takes a certain type of tenacity to get a movie off the ground. Just know when you're watching that 2 hours of that movie, just know it was literally blood, sweat, and tears. Literally. Because the ups and downs, the back and forth, the negotiating, the egos, star saying, no, I don't want my credit here. My credit has to be over his credit and placed on this. Oh, I want a single car credit versus a group car credit. What that means is when you see these names pop up on the screen, if there's three names all together, it's like, oh, okay, it's John, it's Matt, it's Mark. All right, no, I want my name across the middle by itself and it has to be up there for 4 seconds. These are the type of requests.
I've always noticed this in movies where there'll be the A-lister starts and then goes, and then at the end there'll be like, and it's the and that people also go for as well. So that's that final name before it gets into.
That's a respect credit.
Yeah. So I've seen that a lot of times.
Right. So I'll give you an example. In my movie, I have all of these brand new stars. And mind you, Matt Rife was not Matt Rife when we shot this movie, you know?
Yeah, you lucked out.
Matt is very talented and we saw that. Okay. We just didn't know how fast his career was going to take off. So you have all of these internet superstars and great comedians in this film. Then you have George Lopez, which is a bona fide veteran in the comedic world. And so with that being said, it's all of these stars and George Lopez, you know, and Jemana Marad and Samra Massari, because these are like veterans and you want to give them their respect. So that's a respect credit.
Let's do another bowl.
The producer, the director, or the actor / actress. Is this which one I prefer?
Yeah. Oh, no. This is who makes the movie. What's the most important cog? Is it the producer? Is it the director? Or is it the star?
In the movie making business, you can't have one without the other.
I know. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. But can you have a great movie with a bad producer? Can you have a great movie with a bad director? Can you have a great movie with a bad actor or actress? That's what I'm trying to get across.
Understood.
You see what I mean?
Understood.
Like, what is the most important thing to get right to help guarantee success? Look, you've mentioned before Scorsese. Mm-hmm. Most people know if Scorsese is directing a movie, it's going to be good. But if they have a shit cast and the production isn't that great, it might tank.
There's always three movies. All right? There's the movie that's written. That's the movie that's directed. And there's the movie that's edited. All right? Everybody in here has seen a reality show before. That's not scripted. It's scripted as far as the scenario. But in the editing bay is when we cut the show together. You could say to the guy driving, I'll take that. I'll place that in a part that makes it look like you were talking to Rasha. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, I never said that. We said you did, you know? Yeah. And so it's the editing to where I can edit a bad performance, to where someone's hemming and humming or they're looking off camera. I can edit someone a good performance. I've worked with actors that weren't as strong before. So in a two shot, I don't do close-ups. I stay in the wide. And when I do close-ups, I focus on the stronger actor. I hear the voice of the other actor, but I might have moved their dialogue to where their cadence is a little bit more flowy, to where it sounds like a better performance. So all of that is manipulation in the editing part of...
You can do that with an actor or actress. Can you do that with a director?
You can. Because as the producer, I trump the director on set. So if I'm looking at the dailies, so a director has to provide me with dailies. That is what we shot today. Typically what happens is we shoot, the director and some of the creative producers, we go and we look at the dailies. It's like, look, listen, I don't like your shot list for this. And it's costing too much to use a crane. So what we're going to do is we're going to use a drone. And instead of swooping around this way, I want the drone coming down and showing the visual this way. So it's a way you creatively respect the other person But even though it'll say the director's name across a Luca film, you know, it's guided.
Yeah.
It's guided. Okay. And there's something called Final Cut. Never again in life will I ever give a director Final Cut again. Because that means they have the final creative decision as to what the world sees. I had a situation to where I gave a director Final Cut and they turned in a 3-hour version of the movie. In this day and age where people have a 30-second attention span as they're scrolling, you're going to deliver a Titanic length. Denzel better be in this movie.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. Yeah. So with that being said, that puts you
so in rank a, them in order of importance.
Order of importance, I would say director, actor, producer.
So the producer is most important.
No.
Oh, you're going.
The director is the most important,
Then the actor.
Then the actor. Then the producer.
But that feels contrary to what you just said.
No.
Because the producer seems to have the power.
Creatively, the director is leading the ship.
Yeah.
If there's something that is going to tank the ship and he's leading in the wrong direction, that's when you step in.
Okay.
My job is the producer. I'm the anchor.
Yeah.
Following the lead. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
the facilitator is
what I am. So the director comes and they say, look, this is my vision for the film. Okay, I like your vision. I'm rolling with that. The writer likes your vision of his words, how you're going to put his words on screen. Okay, cool. Let me facilitate everything you need to do that.
Okay.
And so that's my job.
All right, next. How are we doing so far?
We're good. We're three. Let me see. Greatest movie line of all time. Wow, I wish you would have prepped me before.
Self-explanatory. Yeah.
Greatest movie line of all time. Wow.
That's going back to your screen run. You want to park it, come back to it?
I want to park
this. Okay, let's park it over here. Let's park it over here.
Box office smash or smash out of the box office?
Okay, would you rather make a movie that's a box office smash, right, or create a movie that's so out of the box that people are going to remember?
That's tough too, because we're in the movie making business. I'd rather have a box office smash, and I'm going to tell you why. Because if you make money, they'll give you the free rein to do whatever you want to do creatively.
Later. Okay.
But if you make something creative that doesn't make any money, you don't have an opportunity to make another movie.
Okay.
So simple. I'm going to go with box office.
Nice.
Are the big five studios hurting creativity? Yes.
Wow.
Yes, 100%.
Take longer to think about it.
You know?
So how are they hurting creativity? Because they're chasing the money? They're chasing...
Yeah,
the,
they want to do the redundancy.
Copy-paste.
That's it.
How many Marvel movies have there been?
You tell me.
I don't know. You're exactly. In the industry. I don't know. Is it more than 20? It must be.
I'm sure 30? It's 150,000. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's like, because they have all the spinoffs and Avengers. Like, it's a lot.
So they're hurting creativity. So if you're an aspiring filmmaker now, what's your advice?
Do it yourself.
But how'd you get the funding?
Do it yourself.
It's expensive.
Do it yourself.
All right.
That's it.
Okay.
If you want to get a movie made by any means necessary, that's it. You know, sometimes it takes 10 years to get a movie made.
Are they being able to have more and more their own way? Or do you feel like there are more independent studios being created that's actually taking away some of that power?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
absolutely.
It's
the 50 Cents of the world, you know, who created the series Power. He just opened up a massive studio in Shreveport, Louisiana. You know, that's an individual. And 50 opens doors for people.
Yeah.
After you go through the studio system and you have a hit series who makes them millions, almost billions of dollars. Now, guess what? I can go and do it on my own. Who does he go sit down with? Tyler Perry. Mm. You know how many people at Lionsgate got fired because they didn't take on Tyler Perry after his success? So with that being said, it's showing people that this can be done. You just have to make a way. But remember, like I said with the previous question, 50 made a hit first. Got the notoriety.
Yeah.
And
got the buy-in. He got the credibility.
Not necessarily the credibility. That's the word I'm looking for. And once he got the credibility, people will follow. Now you go do it on your own.
Yeah.
Only reason I went through the studio system is to see how this is done.
Are they all the same studios, whether it's Paramount or Universal or Sony Pictures? Are they Warner Brothers? Are they all the same, or do you find that actually some are better than others?
People at the studios do whatever they need to do to not lose their job.
So they play it safe.
They play it safe.
And that's the killer of creativity.
100%.
Absolutely.
100%.
And that's the issue. I can't remember the last time I went to watch a movie where I felt I haven't seen something like this in a while. Mm-hmm. I have to go back quite a long time ago. Inception was one of those movies mm-hmm. that caught me a little bit. Mm-hmm. Sixth Sense caught me off a little mm-hmm. bit. Mm-hmm. Every now and again, they come along, right? Avatar, mm-hmm. when it was first, that was over 20 years ago, mm-hmm. give or take. Mm-hmm. There are movies that come along every few years that are very, very different to what I've already seen before, whether that's through technological advancement or whether that's through mm-hmm. creativity in, mm-hmm. in the plot, the screenwriting. It's a shame because that's what's hurting the cinema industry.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's,
people are getting bored of the same shit.
Yeah, it's the same shit, you know. They know that they have their summer blockbusters. They know what they assume is going to do well by statistics and numbers and figures. Yeah. And so, you know, they just follow the same formula that seems to work for them. Box office wise, but I just really feel that there's a lack of quality in the movie theaters that when you get a movie or a franchise that you know, you just go.
Yeah.
You just go see it. And I'll tell you why. A lot of kid movies do a lot better than anything else. I mean, when you go to the movie theaters, a kid can't go by itself. So that's automatically at least two ticket purchases. You know, the kid, the mom. Then the kid wants to bring a friend. So there's the kid, the mom, the friend. You know what I mean? I want to bring the cousin. Like, so it's like, that's why they do a whole lot more in box office. As far as creativity, it's the animation that gets to have a little freedom.
Yeah.
You get movies like Soul. Soul was incredible. Mm. There was another movie I can't think of, but it was so impactful. It was one of those stories to where it literally told a grown-up story. I love when cartoons do that. It tells a grown-up story in a cartoon way that's laid out so simplistic, and you're in the theater. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's another level.
It's like, it's another level. You know, I've watched cartoons like now that I saw when I was a kid, and it was so much stuff that went over my head. But now,
there's some Tom and Jerry cartoons I've watched recently.
So like, many. It was like, deep whoa, stuff, it was some like, deep stuff in there, know? So it was some impactful stuff. Yeah, nice. For sure.
Nice.
Let's jump into something.
How's my screenwriting and my questions going?
No, it's going great, man. It's going great.
Yeah.
Toughest thing about being a Hollywood producer.
So this is more about you, right? So
I would say, you know,
the condoms being poked. What's the toughest thing? That was
because I was the actor.
Yeah.
You know, I was the face. I like the right people giving me credit, not the wrong people. I don't necessarily need to be the face anymore. I don't crave attention like I used to. It's more of I want to be remembered and revered for the way I made someone feel with something that I wrote, produced, or, you know, acted in even, you know, it's the feeling that you leave behind. You know, a lot of people won't remember what you said to them, but they'll always remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like a lasting impression that I want to leave. But the toughest thing about being a producer is getting things over the line in films made that actually mean something. You know, because studios and financiers, they're dollars and cents. They don't really care about the impactfulness of the story. I want Spider-Man 15. You know, I want those numbers, you know. All they see is ROI and the return. So the hardest thing is getting something over the line and getting people to say yes. Because think about it. As a producer, I have to make 300 people move in the same direction. Producing is really just managing people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I have to get this actor to say yes, this actor to say that they'll work with them, have them agree to the budget that we have. You know what I mean? It's so many different moving parts. And so putting that all together is stressful.
Yeah, I can
but,
imagine.
But the gratification is what we
do. So how do you deal with that stress, that anxiety? What's your coping mechanism?
I do a lot of meditation. I do a meditation. I meditate in the morning and I meditate before I go to bed. I try to shut off as much as I possibly can and give your brain that time to rest. It's hard a little bit in this part of the world because I have to work American hours sometimes. So it's like in the middle of the night, I'm up. And then I have to wake up and do different things in Dubai, catch an hour of sleep here and there, grab a coffee, and then jump into my second night, you know, when America's waking up. Now I'm starting a second half of my day, Zoom calls and different things like that, because I'm still producing shows in the States. I'm gearing up to produce some stuff in the States right now, so I still have to be on Zoom calls back and forth. So, you know, it's that type of thing. But I still love what I do. Filmmaking is a gratification that you can't pay for when people like your material. So, you know, it's cool.
I love it. I love the honesty as well.
Hollywood, entertainment or political?
It's Hollywood, isn't it? Political. Entertainment vehicle or political vehicle?
Political.
Okay, why?
Political. This is something you probably don't know. The Pentagon in America has an annual budget for Hollywood movies.
Wow.
So they pay for certain productions to put and infuse certain propaganda. I love the movie Deadpool, but I hated the propaganda that they pushed through it. And that really struck a chord with me. And you know what was even more?
The latest Deadpool?
The latest Deadpool. Did you see it?
I did, yeah.
You didn't catch it?
There wasn't much of a plot, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but did you catch it?
We're used to it here in the Middle East.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly speaking.
The theater went silent when we saw it.
Yeah.
And okay. I watched it here.
Okay.
And so there was just a lot of propaganda that was pushed through that movie.
Yeah.
You know, who put it in there? I don't know. Who was forced to put it in there? I don't know.
Yeah.
But they push a lot of things that they want you to believe in movies. So if you want to go way, way, way back, the stereotypical like racism type stuff. A kid doesn't know black from white. They just know that's my friend, right? But if you put a picture in front of a child, let's just say like a black person, a white person, a Spanish person, whatever it may be, and you say, oh, who's the bad guy? They'll point to who the bad guy is. Typically, it's the darker skin. But I'm going to tell you why. When they make movies and all the bad guys in the movies, they make look a certain way, all right? So when they're painting certain frames and certain pictures, they put a certain person in that. So subconsciously, that you're being programmed to think that that person is bad. That's just the images that have been put out. So with that being said, it's programming. And
It's
brainwashing. And they program you to think what they want you to think. And so with that being said, it's not the people's fault. It's the people in control's fault. Because you program these people to think a certain way. And it also helps the people that are controlling, because if the people realize that they're being puppet mastered and they say, okay,
yeah,
we're going to unify as a people, they can't have that.
No.
Because if black, white, Spanish, Arab,
divide and conquer.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we all got together and was just like, forget the powers that be, you've been causing this race war and all this other kind of stuff going on, and we realize it now, we've woken up.
Give me a scale. Give me how much racism is there in Hollywood? Like a scale.
A lot.
Like 1 to 10.
55.
Is it really?
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you an example. Meryl Streep, right? Brilliant actress. Viola Davis, brilliant actress. Viola Davis is an EGOT. She has EGOT status, all right? I don't know, you know what that is? Okay, EGOT status is, she's won every award.
Okay.
That means...
she's a master of her craft.
No. But no, it's an actual title.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. EGOT status, that means you've won an Emmy. You've won...
An Oscar.
Grammy. You've won an Oscar, you've won an Academy Award, and you've won a Tony Award. Tony Award is the Oscar for theater, like on stage, right? So there's very few people who have EGOT status. She's one of them. She gives phenomenal performances in every movie she does. So does Meryl Streep. However, Meryl Streep doesn't have EGOT status.
How many people have that status?
It's literally a handful. Yeah. But Meryl Streep, let's just say she's getting $20 million a picture. Viola will get three. You know what I mean? What is the reason why this person gets this amount of money per movie, but this person only gets this amount of money per movie. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Is there also a female-male bias on top of the racism?
Always.
So on top of being black and a woman, that's always double negative in her.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And that's this is so kind of...
By contrary, if you're a white male, you have a higher chance.
You have a higher chance. I mean, if you really... White males are funny. And the reason why I say that is everybody else in the world has had to fight for something. Women have had to fight for women's rights. The African-American culture has had to fight for what they believe in. The Asians, everybody. The white man has never had to fight for anything. It's always given to him. He always has the upper hand on everything. Either he's in power or his uncle is in power or somebody's in power. Or, you know, you have that privilege. But it's just the society that was built in the hands that it was built by, you know. And when you are the person that are making the laws, you're going to make the laws to benefit you, you know. Not everybody else. Why would I want them to benefit? So that's how I'm specifically talking about America in the European continent, but that's how it was built. So with that being said, that lineage has been passed on and it becomes programming.
The thing is, it's not just in entertainment. That's across, that's across every type of industry. Mm-hmm. So what will it take for it to change?
People that are in power that have the ability to make the change actually do it. But if we look at our history, and I can only speak about American history, we have to look at the individuals who tried to make changes and what happened to them. JFK, we see what happened.
Well, Lincoln was one of the OGs, right?
You know, it's any time. So this is how the presidency works. You go into the office. Hey, you won the presidency. Great. And then all of a sudden you're set down and it's like, okay, you're the face, but this is how this really goes. You know, that's passed down through every industry. Our pyramid, our food pyramid, was a complete farce, complete scam, because they're telling people to eat certain things because they're funded by the food administration industry. So if the Post and all the food companies are funding you, you're going to put that food pyramid in the schools to push what you want to sell. It's all marketing. To answer your question, it's going to take change when a person that is in power says, I can't be bought, I will not be bought, and I'm going to do what's right for the people. This is actually why I love your country, Italy.
Which one?
Yeah, I know, right? Italy. They were the first ones to ban the Beyond Meat, the fake meat and everything like that. Majority of food in Italy is food to table. It's sacred. Farm to table. Yeah.
Italy, you know? Food in Italy is sacred.
It's amazing. It was the first place that I went in the world that because I normally have lactose intolerance.
Yeah, me too.
And I can eat cheese in Italy. And it was the first time, and it was like,
it's
wow.
So good, right?
You know, it's so good. And so with that being said, it's like all of those different nuances are passed down into every industry. And if someone can be bought, there's going to be corruption.
And 99% of the time, people can be bought.
People can be bought. Everybody has a price. And so that spills over into film and television. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do what I do, because visuals are such a powerful medium. If I'm putting visuals out into the world that are causing people to act and do certain things that are negative, that's my karma. I just led a bunch of people in the wrong direction for money. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, I want to make money like anybody else. I want to entertain like anybody else. But at the same time, I have to have a underlying theme of something that can resonate to the masses and help change this place for the better.
Message. Again, so back
yeah,
to the message.
Yeah.
Very good.
So that's
very nice.
That's a good political.
One. Yeah, I think that was an easy one to say.
Yeah, it was a very
great
easy
stuff,
one.
Mate. Really good stuff.
Successful scripting or unscripted success?
All
elaborate.
Right, so what do I mean by this? So, would you rather be a successful script writer or to have an unscripted amount of success? Like, success will just come, we don't really know. where it's going to come from. You don't know how your journey is going to be, but you're successful regardless.
Well, my life has been the latter. You know, everything is taking a chance. I've taken some chances and I've failed so many times. I actually have a book coming out probably in about January.
Is there anything that you're not doing? It's unbelievable.
I'm going to die empty.
It's unbelievable. I'm telling you, you're going to take my reserve tank. It's fantastic.
You know, no, I have a book coming out. It's called The 7 Laws to 7 Figures, How I Failed My Way to Success.
Brilliant.
And
I'll read it.
What I think is, it's like people want to know your story, but they don't really care. People don't really care.
You know what they care about? They want to know what they can learn and if it can relate to them. So if you've had something that's happened to you that I'm kind of going through, how did you get through it? Give me that tip and I'll take it. I'll latch onto it.
Part of that, but people want a shortcut.
That's true.
What can I learn from him that's a shortcut to me getting that?
Yep.
People always ask you, how did you make it? How did you make it? I can tell you exactly what I did. For one, you won't go through what I went
through. First of all, get some rats.
Right.
Get some pizza. Go to.
No, it's a lot, you know? But it's like, I can tell you my exact path and you can follow that exact path and it will not pan out the way that mine's panned out. So with that being said, people get interviewed because of their success. People never get interviewed because of their failures. So with that being said, I wanted to expose my failures, but at the same time, what I learned from those failures and the laws that I started to follow after I failed doing the same thing so many times.
Yeah.
So there's 7 specific laws in my life I attach to my life, and these are just laws that I don't break in any scenario. And so it's led me down a pretty good path thus far. And at any time I'm slightly veering off, shit starts to go wrong. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, bring my ass right back. Yeah. You know?
Do you believe in fate?
Do I believe in fate? I believe in destiny. Yeah, I believe your destiny's written. I believe that we have opportunities in life that can change your destiny.
Because this is what the question is really asking.
Mm.
Can you write your own destiny, right? Or is it just going to happen, right? And it's unscripted, the success that's going to come your way.
I think when you're made, God already knows what you're capable of and he knows what he put inside you. So I do believe that your destiny's already written.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you believe that, it's a scary thing.
It is a scary decisions
that you're making, do you have free will anymore? Is that gone?
No. You see, you have to think about what I said. The first part is God already knows who you are. So he knows what decision you're going to make when you're presented with this. And that's the way you shape your own destiny. So I'll give you an example. I read a book a long time ago called Make Your Bed. And the basic theme to this particular book was, if you just get up and just make your bed every day, that's the first start of consistency. So making your bed make you read your affirmations. Reading your affirmations may make you go to the gym. Going to the gym is gonna make you feel better. Feeling better makes you gonna get out and go. You understand? So it's a constant effect.
It's consistency. It's micro achievements.
Absolutely.
Something bigger.
Absolutely. Yeah. So God knows that, okay, if I give him this dream, he's gonna go after it. She's not. He's not. I'm not gonna give that to his dream. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not going to give that to him. I'm going to give that to this guy. Sometimes God gives multiple people the same idea. And it's like, okay, who's going to go get that first? That's why some will come out and you'll be like, I had that same idea. But that person was faster. He had more tenacity. And he got to it first. How many people had the idea of Google or YouTube or something
like that?
There's
no real original thoughts. Much.
You know?
It's just nothing. A question of people will do it or they won't do it.
Only thing that's the original in this world is life.
Yeah.
Something different happens in life every single day.
100%.
Everything else is regurgitated.
I believe that. Shaking his head.
Man, bro.
I know what this book. I know what the question is. Okay. Robert De Niro. Or Al Pacino, who's the better actor?
Robert De Niro.
Why?
Versatility.
I had the same thought. He can do more.
And he can do more without changing who he is, you know? And he was actually one of the stars that was in that movie that I was telling you about called A Bronx Tale. He played the little boy's father. but then he can turn around and play a gangster in Casino.
Yeah.
And then he can turn around and play Meet the Fockers. And it's just as brilliant, yeah. just as, you know, his performance is elevated. You know, he's starred with, you know, amazing people. And I'll give that same example with, well, you know what? Let me say this after I see Gladiator 2. Because people used to ask me all the time, who was the better actor, Leonardo DiCaprio or Denzel Washington?
It's a tough one.
I'd have to go with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Is that because you know Leo better? Is that because you know the man, you can't still, and that's the problem. When you're friends with Jamie Foxx or Gerard Butler or whatever, you become emotionally attached.
Well, no. I've met Leo on several occasions.
Yeah.
I've hung out with Leo.
What's he like?
But I don't know Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Partying with someone. And
yeah. How does he come across? Is he a cool guy? He comes across
very,
like a cool guy.
Very relaxed, yeah. very sure of himself, not boastful at all, loves hip hop, like very down to earth.
Okay. Have you met Denzel?
I have met Denzel, but I haven't had an in-depth conversation with Denzel.
I'd be frying stiff if.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, Denzel is his aura. It's, even on screen, you can just see his aura. It's unprecedented.
You know what? That's the type of person I would just listen to. I'd have a question. If I knew I was going to meet him, I would have a question ready for him.
What would you ask him?
Right now, at this moment, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because like I said, I met him one time in passing. But I would have a question for him that has either been bothering me or something, because that type of person, you make sure you leave an impression. Ask them something that's going to completely, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Now he's stopping what he's doing and you have him for a moment.
Okay.
So don't clam up, man. It's an opportunity.
Yeah, no, look, it's just because there are some people that you yeah. just love to meet. He would be yeah. one of them, but there are some who bring a certain level of just
awe. He definitely has a presence.
Yeah, and you can feel that even on social media, man, scrolling yeah. and when he talks, yeah. you just feel like this.
Yeah.
He's bringing a weight behind yeah. him, this yeah. cloud that, no,
cloud
one
that
has.
No one else has.
It's like, just like yeah. he's a heavyweight.
He's a heavyweight.
If you could only have one actor, one actress playing a movie, right? You've written it's the best screenwriting you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you picking to act in the male lead and who's leading in the female lead? Who are you choosing?
Man, you should have prepared me for these questions.
Dude, it's improv. That's what it's about. That's what it's about.
Female lead. I am going to go with romantic.
The movie is...
The drama.
Let's keep it light. It's a rom-com.
In a rom-com, I'm going to go with... Nah, I'm only saying that because she's pretty.
Who are you thinking of?
I'm not telling you that because I know her. Let me see.
There's a young actor called Luca Alamo. I don't know if you know. He's a show. He's a star.
I've actually heard about him. Yeah,
he's got a certain level of sort of charisma.
Yeah. He's got this George Clooney kind of thing going on with him. I have to check him out.
You're welcome, George.
I actually like, I don't know why her name slips my mind. She starred opposite Will Smith in a movie called Focus. She was with Leo.
Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie. I would pick her for a couple of reasons. Of course, she's easy on the eyes. However, there's not a lot of gorgeous actresses that can actually act.
Yeah.
And she's one of them. Like, if we were talking a little bit back in the day, that choice would have been Julia Roberts.
I would have had Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock?
For me, the ultimate rom-com.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah.
It's something about when you shoot a movie, you have the raw footage,
yeah.
and then you color it,
okay.
right? The coloring process is so amazing because I can make her eyes bluer. I can make her hair redder. I can do it.
If my post-production team are watching, work wonders, please, with this. I want to be glowing. Yeah.
But it's amazing. But there's something about, like you said, that presence. Julia Roberts, when she smiles on screen, ugh, and it's just up on that big, you smile,
yeah.
you know? It's just something about when an actress just lights up the screen, and it's something okay. that you
so
can't.
So going with Julia Roberts in rom-com.
Julia Who's Roberts rom-com. I like versatility, but this is not rom-com, though. Christian Bale is one of my favorite actors.
Okay. I would never associate him with rom-com, though.
Yeah, I would never associate with rom-com. But Christian Bale is who was in the back of
my mind. He's a great actor.
But when we switched to rom-com, I would have to...
You've got to think about charisma on screen with Julia Roberts.
Yeah, with Julia Roberts. So I would probably flow in the... Probably the Brad Pitt direction.
Okay.
You know, they've already played, they were in The Mexican together and a couple other things.
Robert Downey Jr. would be my shout. I can see a bit of charisma between them potentially. No, don't like him.
Yeah, no, I love Robert. I love Robert. Yeah, I've met Robert. I've worked with Robert. He's great. Yeah, but I mean he's great. He's great. Brad Pitt and Julie Roberts. That's like the perfect.
Now what's the line going to be?
Oh man. You're adding layers to this. I'm still trying to figure out the question. But if I can go back to just this question, I'm not going to say the greatest movie line of all times, but this line really resonated with me. And the line was from Heath Ledger's version of the Joker. And he was just like, it's like a dog chasing cars. You don't know what you're going to do when you catch it. It's the chase. And I think life is a lot like that. Wow. You know, a lot of people are chasing something, especially in Hollywood, and they reach it and you don't know what to do anymore because your whole life was about getting to this point. If you reach it, then what? This is why you have a lot of young stars, they turn to drugs. They peaked at 25. You got a whole life to live. What are you going to do now? Everything else is down here. You already hit the top of the billboards. Yeah.
They got a taste of Nirvana.
They got a taste of it. You know, this is why like stars, let's just say like Justin Bieber, they fade to the back. You know what I mean?
Britney Spears.
It's like when you throw a child in that grown-up scenario and they're being introduced to things, it's just like, whoa, you know, what's happening?
Macaulay Culkin,
you know, it's like you have to take a break from this and then you got to come back.
River Phoenix.
I mean,
there's so many of them.
River Phoenix, yeah. You know what I mean? I've actually performed in the place where he OD'd at the Viper Room on Sunset. But, you know, he's relived through his brother, Joaquin. And so with that being said, it's like I really think that a lot of life is like dog chasing cars. A lot of people forget about the journey.
He was a hell of an actor, wasn't he?
Heath Ledger. But you know the funny thing about that? Because one of my other favorite actors of all time is Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson, you can Google this. There was an interview and they were on the red carpet and they run up to Jack and they said, Jack. Did you hear what just happened to Heath Ledger? He said, no, what happened? He said he overdosed. He said, I told that kid that role was dangerous. I told that kid. The thing about it is, to be that good, I can't be in that mental state and then just go home with my kids and hi. That's a snap. You transition, you're tricking your brain, like the mannerisms, the way he walks, and it's something you tap into psychologically to get to that place. I don't know if I should say this on camera, but Jamie Foxx had an issue. I don't know if he's ever talked about this publicly, so I want to say it, but he had a problem getting out of the mindset of the soloist. So if you remember that movie with Robert Downey Jr., that's where they became friends. He played an autistic, was it cello or violinist?
He was
absolutely brilliant in that movie. But to go to that place and to be believable on screen, you tap into something that you would never believe. And there is no going to set and then coming home and living your regular life. That's who you are for 3 months.
Yeah, you can't turn off.
And you have to actually do therapy to get out of that person so you can come back to you. You know, so it's, think about how they brainwash people when they go to war. You know, you have to be trained to not care that you just killed a kid. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like that's a form that's inhumane. So when you tap into that as an actor, people really need to know what you went through to deliver.
That's probably why you went out of the US Navy at some point and you got out of being in front of the camera as well. So you could have some level of normalcy in your life because now you can go to the gym when you want.
Yeah.
You can do 1, 2, 3 without it being such a fuss. On some level, you didn't want all of that. Yeah. With the negative that's also associated.
Yeah. Imagine if you were Beyonce and you just want to go for a walk. You can't. I got to call security. Yeah. I got to You know, it's just it's a different level. And like I said, I mean, I'm close enough to the people who are really famous to where I don't need it, man. I know I see the problems they go through. And then you're a walking lawsuit. Somebody will come up to you and talk shit to you just so you can react. I'm suing. That's all they wanted. And it's just like, I don't want myself, my family, or anybody to be a target of that. It's scary, man. Yeah. It's scary. And so that's one of the reasons why I love living in Dubai. Yeah. You can't have paparazzi. Yeah, yeah, you can't, all of that type of stuff.
We love having you here. Look, we're so happy to have, you know, you're a Hollywood star, Hollywood producer, whatever you want to call yourself, but you brought that here.
Thank you. You've got
an amazing movie coming out.
Thank you.
I personally can't wait to watch it. Hopefully you'll be inviting me to the premiere.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But mate, you, more than anything else, you come across as a very level-headed, down-to-earth, humble guy. I could go have a drink with, I can have a conversation with. And I would like to call you my friend because you're just a lovely guy. Generally, you're a lovely guy.
Thank you for having me. Look, I really appreciate it, man. This is a great time.
Yeah, yeah, look, we'll get you on again, maybe season 4 later down the line.
Let's do it.
When you're writing me in, you've read my script, all that stuff. I'm going to give you some pizza next time as well when you come.
I love it. I love it.
But wish you all the best, man.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Guys, please like, please subscribe. Thank you for watching The Inside Track with me, Luke Allam. And stay tuned for the next episode coming very soon.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.